Evening. I wonder if we were to go out into the street and do one of these talking head interviews they often do on TV, where these people look completely surprised that the camera's being shoved in their face and asked a bunch of questions. I wonder if we were to ask people, what does fasting mean and why do people fast? What sort of responses we might get? Thinking about it, if you flick onto the next slide, I think one of the things people might suggest is this. Does this ring any bells for anyone in this picture? It's the Tower Bridge in London. There's a box there with someone inside it, suspended over it. Sorry? I think David Blaine, yes. About 10 years ago, a magician, stuntman, entertainer, I don't know how you classify him, David Blaine, decided that he was going to set himself the challenge of lasting 40 days, actually over 40, 44 days without water. To make it just a bit easier or harder, I guess, he suspended himself in a box over the Thames, a clear plastic box, for there for everyone to see. There was a big launcher as he was lifted into the air on the opening night. It was on TV and all sorts. He did do it successfully. He lasted the 44 days. If you look into it a little bit, some people are a bit suspicious maybe about whether it was a real endurance. There was a, you can, if you want research online, what some people's views about whether he really did it, and this is something that follows him, his other stunts. He does these stunts a lot, and there's always a bit of suspicion around whether they are stunts, whether they're real feats of endurance. One thing that did happen is they had to put, they had to bring in extra security guards. He became a bit of a target from people on the way home after a night out who wanted to suggest to him that the food they had down there he should try and eat or various things like that. So there was a bit of an issue around that. I don't know what that says about people on a night out in London, but they were trying to taunt him and then get him to finish it. So maybe this is what people think about fasting if we were to ask them. Maybe another thing is the hunger strikes that happen from time to time, like political. People for politically motivated want to, as a protest, not eat for a period of time. Maybe one of the more famous ones, Mahatma Gandhi, did it for 21 days back in the 1940s as a protest against the government. Or a bit closer to home, the Republican prisoner Bobby Sands, who sadly died after his hunger strike in Northern Ireland's Mays prison, took 66 days on hunger strike as a protest against protest for the Republican cause and against the things that are going on in Northern Ireland. Or maybe what would come to people's minds is Ramadan and the Muslim fasting that goes on there and the feasting that goes alongside it, obviously, at the beginning and end of each day. Maybe some of you work with Muslims and you see them during this time and then how they go about this. If you don't know this, they refrain from mostly from eating, but there is other things, including smoking, they should refrain from during daylight hours, and they often will get up early in the morning to eat before daylight and then feast at the end of the day. And then it ends with a feast, and that's part of it as well, the community side of it as well. But the main focus is giving up food for daylight hours. Maybe there's other things. It might be linked. Fasting sometimes gets linked in with extreme dieting and all sorts of things. Maybe there's other things that come to mind if we were going to ask people. But this is like the worldly view. We want to try and have a look at what the Bible says about fasting and how that contrasts with that. As John explained a couple of Sundays ago, this series is looking at spiritual disciplines. Celia mentioned it a little bit at the beginning. I don't know if you ever hear the word discipline, what that means to you. What comes to mind for me is an adult disciplining a child and all the connotations with that. And that is one take on the definition, but what it's really talking about in this series, the word discipline, is more like what an athlete or a sports star might take part in to be good at their chosen sport. A discipline that requires hard work, dedication, but ultimately for the athlete, for the sports star, has a payoff when they come to run the race. So in that context, what about the discipline of fasting? How does that help us as Christians? There's a quote on the next slide, thank you. It talks about this. The end purpose of fasting is always spiritual growth, not the abstention in itself, not the giving up of food. That's not the focus of it for us. Whilst clearly fasting is about giving up food, and that's how we do fasting, that's not the end goal of it. And we're not to fast for any of these reasons that we might have talked about at the beginning. Whilst political fasting has a place, I guess, in this world as a form of protest, that's not why we should be fasting as Christians. It's not like David Blaine to prove our endurance, to show that we can sit in a box for 40 days and go without food. And it's not about the process of abstention, giving things up, even though that can be part of it. These are all things that can be secondary benefits of fasting. Clearly, if we fast regularly, it does teach us something about giving things up. But the primary purpose should be focusing on God and seeing a spiritual growth in ourselves and others. If I was to go to my wife and say that I felt I needed to spend more time with her to help our relationship grow, and I'd made some plans and I was going to get the parents to look after the kids and we could spend time away together. And I ended it by saying, and the way I'm going to do that is take you to the cricket every day for the summer so that we can sit there for a good 8 hours and spend time together. She might be a bit dubious about my intentions of spending time with her. She's a loving woman and she has spent time at the cricket with me because it's my hobby, my passion. But it wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't be about spending time with her. I'd be missing the point clearly. And there is a link with, there's a clear challenge or a wording of this in Zechariah. Again, another book that we maybe don't touch on too much. The second from last book of the New Testament. Zechariah 7, verses 4 and 5 says this. Then the word of the Lord Almighty came to me. Ask all the people of the land and the priests, when you fasted and mourned in the 5th and 7 months for the past 70 years, was it really for me that you fasted? That challenge of making sure that we're fasting for the right reasons, fasting with our focus on God. Yes, we might get something out of it in the long term. Yes, we would be hoping to grow as a Christian. Yes, it might be teaching us things. It might make things clearer to us. We might gain understanding. But starting with that idea of looking to God. We need to guard against this idea of doing it for ourselves and maybe ask ourselves in fasting and in anything, this question in Zechariah, are we really doing it for God? I want to point out, just in case it's not obvious, although you're all obviously very educated people, in the Bible, when it talks about fasting, it's generally referring to the practice of giving up all food for a period of time, but still drinking water. It's not necessarily about giving up one thing for a length of time like we might do at Lent. That is can be classed as a type of fasting, but generally in the Bible, when it says fasting, it's talking about giving up food. And there is something very good, I think, in the practice of giving up something for the period of Lent. Whether, you know, I know people who give up chocolate or TV or different things like that for that period of time. But nor is fasting about giving up food and water. It's not this extreme thing about putting our bodies through that. And in fact, our bodies really can't cope without water for any length of time. There is times in the Bible when that does happen in certain situations, a lot often with prophets. But it's clear that that's something that God would put on certain people in a very specific way. So it's not talking about that. We can cope without food for a while, probably longer than we think. I don't know how many people here have tried fasting. But today we live in a society where there's abundance of food available. Now, I know with things like food bank, you know, there is people who clearly struggle to get food, but that's not necessarily because of the unavailability of food. That's for other reasons, maybe financial reasons. We only have to turn on the TV for a few minutes and we're bombarded by adverts for food and drink. We walk out of here, we could probably be at a shop in selling us food in a few minutes, no problem. Almost every week I come home from church and without fail push through my letterboxes, something like this. And this is, as I was walking out this evening, this was there. This is not a one I've kept from another week. I don't know if it's the same for you, but I don't know how these shops, so many of them spring up for, whether it's the same ones. I never really read them, really. But there's this constant thing of we've got food available to us. We don't even have to leave our house. We can pick up the phone and have someone delivered to our door within 20 minutes. So giving up food goes against all that. It marks us out. And I think it has a profound effect on our bodies as well. We're clearly, as we're sitting there not eating, conscious of the fact that we're going through fasting. At some point, your stomach's going to kick in and try to remind you that you haven't eaten for however many hours and that it wants feeding. But part of fasting requires the willpower to overcome that. And I think there's actually something in that lesson of overcoming that discomfort. Maybe fasting can teach us things like we may need to think about giving up the things we feel we're entitled to. Food's such a basic thing that we think we're entitled to. And so giving that up has a lesson that we need to look at our consumption. Maybe fasting can teach us, like we talked about with food bank, there's others who we're more fortunate than and don't have the food they need. Maybe we have to think about the fact that even food that we might take for granted, the basic thing that's there all the time, that's still a provision from God. And sometimes we are called to do things that are uncomfortable, physically uncomfortable, spiritually uncomfortable, different things like that. But realizing that for some people, particularly the food side of things, that's an everyday occurrence. We might choose for a certain period of time to fast, and then at the end of that we get to go back to our normal lives where we have food available when we want it. Some people don't have that choice. So on to the passage in Ezra. up on the screen, or if you want to look at it in pages 480 of the Pew Bibles. What's this trying to tell us about fasting? What can we learn from fasting from this? One thing that's quite clear, whenever you read about fasting in the Bible, it kind of goes with something else. We see it in verse 23 here. It says, "We fasted and petitioned our God about this." So I think one thing we have to see is that fasting is only part of the process. There's something we need to do alongside it. John mentioned that at the beginning that sometimes we have a struggle with spiritual discipline because it requires time. We have to find the time to do it. And he actually made the point that fasting and others are kind of the opposite. We can't really say that we can't fast because of time. It actually, in some ways, gives us the time back, whether it's from preparing a meal, washing up, whatever it might be. But if we are to fast, it's not about then saying, great, I'll put my feet up for a few hours and use it. You know, we have the challenge then of what we're doing in that extra time, what we're doing in that time we would have eaten. And throughout the Bible, this pattern's repeated. Prayer and fasting do seem to be the main ones. But there's other ones. Sometimes it's fasting and worship. Fasting and listening to God. Fasting and repentance. But it tends to always be fasting and something. Also in this passage, I think it's interesting to look at why they are fasting. Celia mentioned a little bit about the situation. They were about to set out on this dangerous journey. They had a specific thing that they were facing. Interestingly enough, they couldn't go to the king for some human protection. You know, there's the suggestion that they could have got protection from the king in the area surrounding them. But they'd already told him that God protects everyone who looks to him or those who rely on God for help. So they were taking this step of putting all their trust and safety in God's hands, not relying on the strength of men. I guess maybe the equivalent might be today if we were to set out into a dangerous area of leaving behind the protection from the police and travel insurance or something like that. That's kind of the equivalent of what they were doing here. And I think sometimes there's a challenge there for us as well. Do we always look to the protection of humans rather than to God? And finally, I think that what we see a bit in this passage is that, and how they start out, is that we have to be humble before God. And in some ways, fasting really forces us into that. By giving up food, the most basic of our desires, the most basic thing that we need to survive, really, it forces us to look to God and be humble. To understand that God provides for us, to understand that God can look after us. But alongside this situation in Ezra where these people fasted, there's actually quite a list of people. If you go through the Bible and look who fasted. On the next slide, thank you. So we have Moses, Daniel, David, Elijah, Esther, Anna is a prophetess in the New Testament, Paul the Apostle, and last but definitely not least, Jesus himself. Now, I don't know about you, what your idea around fasting was. When I was growing up, my dad's a Baptist minister, or was until he retired, and I think I always saw fasting as something for people who are ministers or that kind of level, you know, this sort of very super Christian, this very committed type thing. Unfortunately, my brother and I weren't always sympathetic. My dad would often fast, like the leadership of this church does, at certain times when they're having away days or things like that, where they're focusing on certain things in the life of the church. And he would fast, and a part of that, he might be at home missing a meal, and me and my brother used to use it as a time to sit there and remind him that we were the ones getting to eat the food and he wasn't. Fortunately, he's a gracious man and didn't tell us where to go, really. But this idea that only certain people fasting, or it's only for, you know, a full-time Christian minister or something like that, I think it's, we need to consider that's the wrong way around. And whilst there is this list of these main Christians, big Christians in the Bible, however we want to classify it, and they did do amazing things for God. We have the list of what they did there, what they achieved. Moses with the laws, David the king, and all he did through the Psalms, and so on. It was about their faith and their willingness to go along with what God wanted them to do, to follow God. And fasting would have been an outflowing of that, of part of that. They would have taken time to fast so they could learn what God wanted from them. They were willing to give up their basic desires to eat and spend time praying to God, listening to God. But I wonder if maybe it should be a challenge for us that so many characters in the Bible that we read about fasted and saw it as a key thing. Now, one thing that when I first saw this list and looked generally at fasting as it occurs throughout the Bible, you might sort of think, well, a lot of the fasting is an Old Testament thing, or people who've come from a Jewish background. Now, in the Old Testament, there was specific laws about fasting that they were to take part in. In Leviticus, it talks about the Day of Atonement. This is the 10th day of the 7th month is the Day of Atonement. Hold a sacred assembly and deny yourselves or fast and present a food offering to the Lord. So there was clear commands in the Old Testament to fast at a certain time, in a certain way, in a certain place. So we might look at that and say, well, actually, you know, fasting is kind of an Old Testament thing. It's something that they had to do in that time, but not now, like sacrifices. We no longer bring goat sacrifices to church on a Sunday. Maybe we can class fasting as that. Well, I think one problem with that is the way that Jesus talked about fasting and approached fasting. After he was baptized and before he started his time of going around and preaching and talking and all the things he did that we read about in the Bible, he took time out and spent 40 days in the desert. We can read about this in Matthew 4, verses 1 and 2. It says, "Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the desert to be tempted by the devil. After fasting for 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry." I love that last bit, he was hungry. I'd be hungry if I had to wait 40 minutes for my food when I was not 40 days. I think part of why it says that he's hungry there is because it wants to make it, you know, clear in a way that he was giving up food and not water. This is not some supernatural fast only Jesus could do. This is Jesus doing a fast in a way that would have hurt him, would have been tough for him. He couldn't just magically do a fast because he's the Son of Man. He would fast and go without food, and it would cause him the same discomfort and pain that we would have. So it doesn't say that he was hungry and thirsty. It just talks about him being hungry. Now, as we heard at the beginning, if you see the thing with David Blaine, he fasted for 40 days. It's talked about that 40 days is possible for a human being to fast. It's quite a level of dedication, and not in any way advocating you'll go away and fast now for 40 days. But it is something that our human body could cope with. Although it does clearly say in any time you read any more detail about fasting that you should take medical care if you're going to do that. It's not something that can do without thought, but it is something our body could do. But in addition to this, we might say, well, Jesus had this mission that none of us had. You know, he's the Son of God. He was going to die on the cross. He was preparing himself in a unique way. But actually, if we were to look at what Jesus talks about in the Sermon on the Mount, he includes fasting in there. If you want to turn to pages 970 in the Pew Bibles, This is Matthew 6, 16 to 18. Matthew 6, 16 to 18 says this. When you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show others they are fasting. Truly I tell you, they have received their reward in full. But when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face, so that it will not be obvious to others that you are fasting, but only to your Father who is unseen. And your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. I think there's a couple of things we can pick out from these verses about what Jesus is saying about fasting. The first one, it's quite clear that he wants us to do it unseen. We aren't to make a show and dance of it. It's not about making ourselves look good. Now, there's a particular thing in here, maybe around the Pharisees. One of the books suggested that the Pharisees' way of fasting was that they would generally fast a couple of days a week. And they chose the days which were the market days in the towns that they were in. And the market days meant more people were around, more people to see them fasting and that side of thing. So there's a clear warning against that. I don't think it's saying that we don't tell anyone at all, but it's the way our heart's thinking about it. If we're telling other people we're fasting because we want their support, we want their prayers, we want to fast as a group, a home group or something like that, I don't think it's disallowing that, but it's the idea that if we're fasting, we're doing it just because we look good or because we want others to think highly of ourselves. And this matches in with our giving. It's the same sort of idea. We should be trying to do it in a way that doesn't bring unnecessary focus to us. Our fasting should be focused on God. He even, interestingly enough, goes so far and says that, you know, this kind of strange thing about putting oil on your head and washing your face is actually saying, you know, basically make sure there's no physical sign that you're fasting. Go over the top to make sure that people can't see that. And the other thing on the slide, as we see up here, this bit on fasting sits in the Sermon on the Mount. If you look back into the beginning of chapter 6, page 970 as well, Jesus is talking about giving to the needy. And then a bit further on in verse 5, he goes on to talk about prayer, 5 to 14. So these three things kind of come together in the Sermon on the Mount. Giving, praying, fasting, fasting, praying, giving. All key components in the lives of Christians. And also he talks about them in the same way. So back in verse 2, chapter 6, verse 2, says, so when you give to the needy, and then he says, explains, do it like this. Verses 5, 6, and 9 actually all say, when you pray, do it like this. And then in verse 16, as we just read, he talks about, when you fast, don't do it like this, as a kind of contrast. So whilst we might not have clear times that we're asked to fast, like Muslims would do with Ramadan, there seems to be this thing coming from Jesus that fasting is something that we will be doing on some form of regular basis, or at least something that we're considering doing as Christians, something part of our normal duty. He puts it alongside giving to the needy, prayer and fasting. There is a little bit in here about the words, and people try to look into whether it's a command or not. He doesn't say, you should fast, and here's how you should do it. Nor does he go to the other extreme and say, if you fast, this is the way to do it. So it's kind of somewhere in the middle, when you fast. But this is the same wording, like we said, he uses about praying. So whilst there might be, I think there's, you know, even entire books written about whether we're commanded to fast and what that might mean, certainly there's an impression coming from Jesus' words on the Sermon on the Mount that fasting is something, as Christians, is part of our duty. So having read all this stuff about fasting and looked through these different passages, how might we go about it? One really interesting approach I read in one of the books was that we start with something that's called a 24-hour fast. Now, before that sounds really daunting, I'll explain what it's talking about. The idea is that you have a meal at lunchtime and you skip the evening meal and breakfast and then have a meal again the next day. So you can argue whether it's fully fasting for 24 hours or not. It's suggested that most people could handle that. Now, I'm not a doctor, so please don't take medical advice from me. And if fasting, alongside all these spiritual disciplines, if you're challenged by any of this stuff and fasting is something you want to take part, and in any way you're worried about the health implications, please speak to someone who knows what they're talking about. But it is suggested that for normal adults, healthy adults, fasting for a period of 24 hours isn't an issue. Of course, there's discomfort. Of course, you're going to be low on energy. But it does suggest that if we take water in that time and, you know, don't do it alongside running a half marathon or something like that, it's something that we can cope with. Another thing I've heard people do as a way to get into fasting or if they felt challenged by it is skip a lunch at work and then use that time to go out to a park or a prayer meeting or something along those lines, that idea. And there is definitely in the book that backs this series that John talked about at the beginning, it's a book called Celebrations of Discipline, and there's definitely in that the challenge of a regular practice of fasting. Now, I've grown up in Baptist churches, and most of the time that fasting happens, it's when the, like we talked about before, when the church leaders are having a time that we might be, they're having a time of maybe appointing a new minister to the church, or they're having a time of looking what the church is going to do over the next year, and they would go away, and we, as the rest of the church, are encouraged to fast alongside them, and that's something that we do here. Other times that we're encouraged to fast is if there's a particularly say a traumatic event or something that's happening to someone in the church, that might be another time that we have fasting. But in this series on focusing on spiritual disciplines and trying to look to how we can grow in these things, one thing I found challenging reading through this is the idea of, do we need to look at fasting as a regular thing? Clearly we can't fast every day. That's not feasible. We can't fast as often as we pray or things like that. But the idea is, and I think from talking to someone actually on the way over here, is that in different churches have different traditions around the regularity of fasting. And so some of you from other church backgrounds might have fasted more than we might in the Baptist church. And I'm sure it varies across things as well. But this idea of regular fasting, of taking this time out, making this sacrifice, giving up this basic desire of food, as part of our ongoing walk with God. Now, it may be that some of you are doing this already, and fantastic, I want to command you on that. And I guess you're following very well the words of Jesus and not sharing it, I don't know. But if, like me, fasting, regular or otherwise, isn't something that you've done a lot of, I would encourage you to think about it and pray about it. And it does actually sound a little bit back to front, but taking time to pray and fast can actually be a good way to start thinking about fasting. Having this focus, this time out, this way to bring our focus on God that fasting gives us, might then help us develop this pattern. By fasting, we give ourselves time to pray and listen to God in a way that we can struggle to do in our daily lives. And it's not about a trick to do that, you know, it's more, something more than that, but it does actually give us a way to break the pattern of our normal lives, to help develop things that we might struggle with. Sometimes it's even talked about that if you find yourself struggling with spiritual disciplines, you take a time of fasting as a kind of like a reboot, a way to get it back into that practice again. If you felt you've lost your way in those things, then sometimes having that period of fasting where you do have a little bit of extra time, where you do have a different focus. To finish, I think clearly Jesus felt fasting was important. He took the time to fast before he started his ministry, and he's made it a part of his Sermon on the Mount, this big explanation of how part of how we should live our lives. And so I think that in as many other things, we should be looking to try to follow Jesus' example. This is my prayer for us. Thank you.